Albert Hawkins, Reel 3. So you were just explaining about the Chinese soldier with the stick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And after that, let's say this, so the Chinese come up and give him a rote amarin. So he must have been somebody in command, you know, but they never wore any insignias to tell you who was who, like, no. And, of course, A, we didn't speak Chinese, they didn't speak English, basically, like, no, so it was all sign language. And then, I think we was down there for about, I don't know, it could have been half an hour, could have been an hour, I honestly don't know, though. And then gradually we could hear voices from around the bend, and then quite a few of the lads, you know, come, you know. We thought, thank God for that, like, because we naturally assumed that, there were so many of their blokes dead and wounded, plus in the heat of the moment, like, you never know what the hell's going to happen, like, you know. And I had thought myself that, you know, this is chips on, like, they're going to, you know, top you, like, you know. And anyway, we all stood around talking, you know, talking to each other, glad to see each other and whatever, like, you know. Then eventually we started marching out. And a lot of Chinese was taking us through, and as we were coming through the valley towards the forward positions, there was bloody chinks. You know, oh God, there's loads. God knows how many it was, and loads it was there. And no one's dead. There was quite a few wounded, and it seemed to me that the chinks didn't bother with the wounded. They didn't bother with them at all. You know, yeah. And there was a few of our lads was wounded. Was coming with us, and we got, I can't remember, but I know we marched for, through the day, and then somewhere along the line, we got holed up for a couple of days, and we had our first meal. It was rice, and we had nothing to put it in. Yeah. I lost my cap comforter, nothing at all to put it in. Some blokes had their cap comforters, some had their berries, and they was chucking it in their berries, like, you know, read it that way. And all I could do was just stick my two hands in. It was like a bath, a big bath, like, you know. Stick my two hands in, like, and eat it that way. And that was the only way I could eat. And then we had some hot water. We had to drink that. And I think we was there for, I can't remember, it was 2 days and two nights, something like that. And eventually they decided to move us. What they'd done was, it was kept us there. They decided to split us up into two parties, yeah. And we actually crossed the river at night, and so we didn't know where there was a ford there, but we didn't know there was a ford there, and the water just come up to here, I think, and got across the river, all right. And what we used to do was march during the night, yeah, and then all up during the day, and so that nobody didn't know where the hell was going, really. Like, somewhere along the line, there was we got put in this one place. I think it may have been about a week, 2 weeks into the march. I can't remember.
What was this for atmosphere amongst you? I mean, were you feeling very defeated? Did you think you were going to be rescued?
Well, there again, no. My main thought was to do a runner, you know, so to get away and, you know, see what's going to happen. But no, to my mind, there was no thoughts of anybody coming to, you know, break us out, or we didn't even know what the hell was laying in front of us, like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Now, the first, like I say, the first chance I got, I was away. There was me and two lads, mm-hmm. Three of us all together.
So you left the column, were you marching at the time?
Yeah, we was at night, yeah. No, yeah.
So what had you planned? You could do?
Well, when we was marching, like, we see the chinks, and they'd be going up and down. I mean, you're talking a hell of a lot of men, like, no, a lot. And they couldn't keep an eye on all of you, you know, so it was impossible. So I thought, well, the idea was basically to get away as soon as possible, so that we, of course, there again, we didn't know what was laying behind us. Right? Now, if we'd have knew that, well, we wouldn't have attempted it. But in my mind, I thought, well, break ranks, get out of here, scoot off, and then meet up with the battalion. That was my idea. And the night time, me, Derek, and
Derek Fluck,
and Stankier, yeah. We marching the column. It was three of us together marching the column, and on the left hand side of the road there was this sort of monsoon ditch, and there was a hedgerow, you know, on the top. And I said to the lads, I says, right, when we get the chance, we're straight in the ditch, eh? And I had to look for the Chinese, couldn't see any, so just dived in, no problem, dived in. And you're the column go past you, and then afterward, we was there for quite a while, because you always had the stragglers, and then we waited for the stragglers to go past. And then, of course, we gets up out of the trench, and gets well away from the road, and we go across the field, and we travels across the field at night, and Derek, he was very, very sick, actually, and he had to stop every 5 minutes. Dysentery, he had dysentery very bad. And we scarpered that night. We meet up during the day, and we scarpered again on the night time, but we hadn't got a clue where we was going. It was in darkness. I mean, we couldn't pick out a landscape or anything, you know, so we'd no idea where we was going. And on the second day, Derek was—he was very bad. So we decided to give ourselves up, and hopefully Derek would have some medical attention. And we got picked up by the North Koreans, I think it was. No, Chinese, sorry, Chinese. Yeah, a North Korean kid, he seen us, and he scarpered. Like, you know, along comes the troops, and we just stood there, like, you know, they took us away, and it was.
What was their attitude to you?
They was alright, actually. Yeah, they was alright, yeah. I mean, there was no... A couple of times we had a few nasty moments, but on the average, no, they was pretty good. Yeah, pretty good, yeah. And there was a lot of shouting and bawling, like, you know, but that was about it, like, you know. And then we got pulled into this place, like, monastery or something like that, I can't remember. And then Derek, unfortunately, was taken very ill, and poor bugger died. Yeah, he died in my arms, yeah, poor bugger, yeah. And my other mate, Stan, he wasn't too good. And the last time I seen Stan, and funny enough, I haven't seen him since, but he's, I know he got home, he was safe, I knew that, but I haven't seen him since. And the night we left that place, he was on the truck. And I was on foot, marching with the rest of the lads, like, you know. And what they used to do was they'd get some stragglers until they got a fair old amount, and then they would move you, you know. Same again that night, when we was away, I gone again. I thought, sod this for a game of soldiers. So I was away again.
You were optimistic, weren't you?
I was very optimistic, I was, yeah, yeah. But,
so how far did you get this time?
I was only away the night, and the dawn broke, and I was trying to find cover, and a bloke walked across a bloody paddy field, and all of a sudden he started shouting and bawling, and he scarpered, and I started running, and all of a sudden I heard these shots, and I thought, uh-oh, so we stopped, yeah, and so Chinese behind me, and that was it, so what, a night's freedom.
No idea where you could go or which direction.
No, I was hoping I was going in the right direction, but I had no idea where I was going, my love. No. All I knew in my mind was the river. If I could hit the river and get across that river, then I know I'd be going south. You know, yeah. But I never got to the bloody river. No.
So, again, they treated you quite well.
Yeah, they on the old, yeah. The only time I had a bad time was after I escaped the third time, and I got picked up. I didn't realise at the time, like I said, I had no idea where I was going. And instead of going south, I was going north. And I got picked up north of Pyongyang, of all places, so I was definitely going the wrong road, you know. And I got picked up by North Koreans. And
so you escaped the third time, were you back in a column of marching men?
Yeah, when I escaped again, yeah.
What did other people think of you escaping? What did they say to you?
Well, it wasn't until after, you know, we got back in the camp. Fair enough, they said, you know, what was the point? You know, but to me, I had to do it. You know, it was one of those things where I had to do it. But afterwards, I knuckled down. I thought, well, you know, I'm here for the duration. Let's get on with it. Live for what you got. Yeah.
So So did you catch up with the original column at all?
No, they was already established in the camp. Yeah.
How long have they been there? Quite a while.
When I broke out first time, well, it was in April, yeah, just after we got caught. I didn't join the lads again, really, until the October.
Really?
Yeah, I was away from the camp for 6 months, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was being transported all over the place, like, you know, by the chinks.
Yeah.
What
was the food and living conditions like for you at this time? It was
either millet, which, like... You know, like which millet, like the birdseed. Yeah, birdseed. Yeah, but it was ground down into a powder. Yeah, mm-hmm. And all you do is add water with it and make a paste, and that was it. Yeah, if you was lucky, you got some boiled rice. Most of the time, it was sorghum, but it's very few, far and few between. Sometimes you might get 2 meals a day. Sometimes you mightn't get nothing a day. You know, it just depends how they felt. Like, you know. But
were their living conditions much better? I mean,
no, not really. No, yeah. They was eating food basically the same as what we was eating in that sense. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Of course, there again, they've been used to it, whereas our stomach wasn't used to it. Like, no, it's entirely different. Like, you know. Yeah.
So, do you remember when you first saw the camp? When you marched up to the camp?
Yeah, I think there was about a dozen of us, I think, and we got into the camp, and it was. The camp was an open camp. I mean, there's no barbed wire or such, because through our camp there was a main road, and we used to go up on the main road and watch all the civvies come walking through, like, you know. But it was a camp. We was well guarded. Like, you had all guards all scattered around, but you had quite a bit of freedom. Like, you know, you could get around. Like, you know. But
so the others had got the camp established by the time you got there.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was Colonel Khan doing at the time?
He'd apparently, after they got to the camp, all the officers and the men and the sergeants and the men were all together. But then the Chinese decided to take the officers away, the sergeants away, and leave the corporals and, you know, everybody else, lance corporals and so forth. And then I believe they tried to get the older generation, as we called it, that was the regulars and the reservists, tried to separate them from the youngsters, yeah? And they actually put a fence, I think, through the camps altogether. But every time they put it up, the next morning, the fence was down, so it didn't work, you know? In the finish, they got fed up and no packed it in. But no, the officers and sergeants and WOs, they was in a different camp altogether, yeah.
So what was it like when you arrived? I mean, people must have assumed you were dead, or...
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was little Barney Dimlow. I can remember marching with him sometime during along the march, somewhere before it broke out. And he was in charge of the billet that I went in, yeah.
I got it put into,
yeah, yeah. And I was there, what, 18 months, I suppose. Yeah, yeah, about 18 months. But,
what was it like? I mean, they'd all got their routines, I suppose.
That's right, yeah.
Like moving into someone else's home.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Well, you know, basically, all it was is when I got there, it was winter. So, first of all, they tried to get us home wood detail to get the timber, you know, for our fires, you know, to cook the rice and the sorghum and stuff. We did go up a couple of times, but a couple of lads, you know, slipped on the ice, of course, you know, badly bruised. Broken legs and whatever, so the chinks decided to knock it on the head, like, you know. So we didn't do actually much during the day, except we used to get up in the morning, and then you had to go up on the square, and then you get this queer fellow up there, a Chinese up there, like, he'd be jabbering away in Chinese, and you get the interpreter come along, communism, you know, basically, like, you know. And it was boring, to be quite honest, absolutely bloody boring. We didn't take a note.
They talk about it like brainwashing.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it didn't, you know, I mean, it was going in there and out for the other year, like, you know.
Was anybody taking
this at all? No, not that I know of, no, no, no. I know when we used to get back, you know, afterwards we were told to go back to the billet, and what was it called? Oh, I forget the word they used to say now. Study, like, basically study, yeah. And what you're supposed to do is get back to your billet, and then what you've heard in the morning is sort of discussing amongst yourselves, you know, usual stuff like. And we used to have one bloke at the door, and have it open it just a crack. And if I remember it rightly, I think it was Edgehog, I think. He used to come along, listen to the billets, yeah. And the bloke would say, "Hey, up yours, Edgehog," you know, and he'd be straight outside the door. And then we just start shouting and bawling at each other. Meaninglessly, like, I mean, there's nothing, you know, you say, "Oh, you silly sod," or, you know, whatever, like, you know. And this blokey by the door would be watching old Edgehog, like, and he'd be going like this with his hands, and he'd be rubbing his hands in glee. He thought we was arguing amongst ourselves because of there. But we wasn't, we were just shouting and bawling. And all of a sudden he'd scarper, and said, "Right, that's it, lads, okay, fair enough, then. And you either get your head down, or you carry on for a normal conversation, like, you know, yeah."
Why do you, this was a Chinese guard you called Edgehog?
Edgehog, yeah.
Why do you call him that?
Well, he looked like a bloody Edgehog.
Oh, his hair,
right? Yeah, his hair was spiky. Yeah. And then we had Ding. He was a moon-faced little bugger, he was. But he was harmless. He was great. He was great. He always used to be whistling. And he'd have his hands behind his back, you know. He'd be sort of coming through the camp and whistling away like. He'd say, "Oh, yeah, Ding." You know, he'd look at us and he'd go, "Ding-o." Which means, you know, number one. And I used to go, "Bow out, bottom look, number two look, you know." And he said, no, ding, ding, bow out, like, you know, just taking the mickey out of him. But he was great. He never had a bad streak in him at all. No, he was good, yeah. He was only a youngster, same as us, yeah.
Did you learn many words of Chinese?
I learned a few, but basically, thank you, water. Hot water, cold water, toilet, a few swear words, which we won't go into at the moment.
So, had you any idea how this was going to end? Did you get any news of the war or what was
it? No, we never got anything at all of, no, no. I know the first winter we had there, that was cold as well. That was in the camp. This was in the camp. And we had quite a few lads dying, you know, in the first year we were there, yeah.
What were they dying of?
Well, it was either from, wounds, we would say. They never had no medical treatment. Or it was malnutrition, basically, you know, and never not getting the right food, not getting the right vitamins and so forth, like, you know. And I think there was about... I'm not sure now. I think it's about 30, I think. Died in the POW camps, I think. But
what happened when someone died?
All we done was just picked them up, and then, as the Yanks used to call it, boot hill, and then go up, dig hole, put them in, and that was it. Yeah.
Did your diet ever vary? Did you ever get any vegetables?
We got some Chinese vegetables. Cabbage, but God knows what they've done with it, but it stunk like hell. But at the same time, I mean, don't matter what it was, you wet it, you know, it's irrespective, like, you know. Don't matter whatever they chopped at you, you wet it, you know. And in the summer, when we were on wood detail, we should go up in the hills, like, you know, pick up the timber, and I forget the weights now, but each man had to pick up a certain weight. And when it first started, it was quite close to camp, but afterwards, of course, it was further and further away, you know. And then after a while, like, you get the log on your shoulder, like, you'd be going, "Oh," and then you chuck it over on here, like, and then by the time you got back to the camp, you was red raw, you know. But they gave you two meals a day. But in the winter, they cut us down to one meal. They said, "Well, you're not working, so you don't need it." It was crazy. They gave us a towel. No soap, a toothbrush, no toothpaste, you know, things like that. You know, they give us tobacco every so often, but no matches, no cigarette papers. You had to, in the village where we was, it was all Shanghai News stuck on the wall. We used to tear that off, like, and roll it up, and they'd chew on it. It's like a paper mache, you know, and then just roll it and then smoke it away, and that was it. Go down the cookhouse to get a load off the cookhouse. And then we used to get some... oh dear, oil like stuff, and get a small tin and put a string in there, a bit of string in there, and light it, and then just blow it out so it's like a wick. Yeah, and could we shove that in the billet, and then whenever we want to smoke, we used to smoke from there, like that. Yeah.
Sounds like you were quite resourceful, really.
Well, yes, yeah, in that sense, yeah, yeah.
Could you make things out of anything?
Oh yeah, yeah. We had quite a few load of lads. Like, I mean, it's a marvelous thing, you know, in a situation like that. Is you got well, we had a bloke. I forget his name now. He was a watchmaker, and he actually built a watch. A clock. He actually built a clock. Yeah, and we used to go there. And I think it was bloody marvelous, like, you know, to see a clock. Anything, bits and pieces, whatever he picked up, you know, metal. Yeah, bits and pieces. And you should say that, you know, when we go on the woody show, find anything, lads, pick it up and bring it back. Like, don't know what it was, it might be a nail or whatever, like, but bring it back. And he done a good, bloody good job of it, yeah. And then every so often the chinks used to have this purge, they'd chuck you out, especially in the middle of the night, it was like, and all your stuff, what you had in the billet was sorted through, like, just to see what you had. Any, you know, weapons, which was bloody ridiculous anyway, or radio, which there again was a bit ridiculous.
But.
Not that I know of, no. Not that I know of, no. We did have an escape committee, but by the time I got to the camp, I'd had a base before, you know, I thought, no, we're not going to have any more. The time I got picked up at Busan, they thought, I was on my own, and they thought that I was part of a special unit because I was so far away from the front line. And yeah, he took me down. It was underground prison thing. It was. It was barbed wire around the wall. It was all rock, like, you know. They had a doorway there. It was a black bar door, and it took us in there. And we had an ammunition box for the toilet. I was down there for about, I don't know, 6-7 weeks, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, but yeah. No, there was a couple there. Yeah, a couple there. And then every so often, with me, they dragged me out. And because they thought it was a special unit, like, I never had no tags or nothing up, let's see. And first of all, they started giving me a bloody good hammer in. Interrogations, this was, like, you know, give me a good hammer in. And then they'd starve you. Once you were stuck, when they'd done that, they'd put you off in a little place by yourself, yeah. And I can't remember when, but one time I was there, and they came for me. Same thing again, you know. Unit where was rested, you're trapped, you know, all the rest of it, you know. And I kept explaining to them that I got taken on the 25th of April, like, with the glasses, like, you know, but they wouldn't wear it. And then they chopped me on this, like, a bloody cradle thing, that's the only way I can think of it, and got my boots off. And the one bloke there, he had a fair old stick, and he beat the soles of my feet, and my feet was like that. Oh, it's all. I've never experienced this pain in all my life. Oh, it's bloody painful. And oh, fair enough, I was shouting and screaming and, you know, gone as well, you know. And then when they finished, I couldn't walk. They just grabbed hold of me, chopped me back in this little hole. And I was there, you know, 2 or 3 days, I suppose. And they brought me back out again. And then I really knew what was, you know, what was going to come. And I thought, of course, I can't take much more of this, like, you know, like, same again. This time they didn't hit my feet at all. They just strung me up on a beam and belted me again with the stick. G10, where? Wow. Where, yeah.
Round
your wrists, yeah. Upon over the beam. And my toes was just about, you know, sort of touching the deck, you know, just touching. And then this bloke got this bloody stick again, like, and he got behind me. It was a bamboo cane, yeah. And he got behind me and he would just belt me across, all across down the back, like, you know. And there again, excruciating pain. And chopped me back in a bit in this hole again. And through that, I was passing blood at both ends, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then stopped for a little while. Then I went back out again, and then they gave me some more, you know, beatings. And then, for some unknown reason, someone must have been convinced that I was telling them the truth. Yeah? So it stopped. And then eventually, after a little while, when I started to heal up a bit, they chopped me back in in the main room. And then we was brought out of there one night. No, one day, sorry, one day. Yeah, we were brought out of there one day and taken up on the top. And they told us in G10, they had us in columns of three. And there was so many, I can't remember now, there were so many Yanks down there, and I can't remember the Yanks. I think there was about 8 British, I think. Mm. So many Yanks, I can't remember. And they took us up on the top, and they tied all our, or no, say, I'm here in the middle. This wrist here was tied to that bloke, and his wrist was tied to the bloke behind him. You know, like that business, and our feet was tied together as well. So we couldn't do a run there, you know. And we hadn't been up there, not long. And a couple of lads fainted because of the fresh air, because we wasn't used to the, because of the foul air, because we weren't used to it, so it blacked out. So the Korean started bloody ramping and raving, like, gives us all the good kick in, takes us back down again. And then sometime later, I don't know how long it was, they brought us up again, and they was going to march us off. And this one, North Korea, he looks at me like, and he goes, pointed at me like, and slit across the throat. And I thought, oh shit, this is handy. And just then, some Chinese came along, you know. And there was a big, big commotion going on between the North Koreans and the Chinese. And from what we can gather, was it the Chinese wanted to know what the other thing was doing with us, you know. And this one Chinese come across to me, like, and he says, you American? I says, no, British. British. And he asked all the lads, like, you know. And eventually, we was untied, yeah. And this one Chinese gave this one Korean a right hammering, yeah. We marched off out of the way. And then it was sometime later, that's when we moved into the camp, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's the North Koreans who
brought you? Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
That must have, I know.
Yeah, I was frightening. Oh, it was, frightening.
How old were you, about 19?
I was 19 then, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Funny enough, with my birthday today, my dear.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, 72,
oh,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah, 72, yeah, thank you, yeah. Yeah.
So, how did you cope with that? What aftermath did you have from that? I mean,
quite a while, you sort of, I couldn't put it, every time you was approached by, a guard, you would be on, tender hooks, like, you know. And I was interrogated a couple of times by the Chinks in the camp, but nothing is bad. I was threatened, you know, but nothing anywhere near what the North Koreans are now. But as soon as I had to go up to the office, like, as they called it, officer, as they called it, interrogation, like, basically, I was messing my pants because A, I knew what was going to come, you know. Mm. But no, fair play. They was good as gold. Yeah, good as gold. Yeah. Mm.
So you've got a little bit more regard for the Chinese. Not
oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah, mm. Yeah, yeah. Mm. There was a couple of nasty chinks, like, you know, but there was far and few between, like, you know. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Amazing.
Yeah.
Right. Albert Hawkins, end of reel 3.